like to mention, welcome back, one and all. Note that next week there will be no share due to the festivities, so we will not be having a share. I should also mention, of course, the share will be cancelled next week. The mitzvah of Talmud Torah will not be cancelled next week. We'll pursue our investigations into the parsha independently. And to the parshas at hand. Tazria and Metzora, of course, the dominant theme is that of Lashon Hara. But the parsha of Tazria actually begins with happier matters. With childbirth, Ishaki Tazria, V'yalda Zachar, V'im Nekeva Teled, and there are the appropriate halachas, there are the days of Tumah and Tara, there are the korbanos. And within the context of the opening of Parshas Tazria, we have the mitzvah of Mila. Perek Yud Beis Pasuk Gimel, Uvayom Hashmini, Yimol Besar Oloso. That is the mitzvah of Mila, much of which has been given already to Avram Avinu, that's before Matan Torah, and it is reiterated again here in Parshas Tazria, and actually there are additional halachas that are derived from the quote-unquote repetition here, specifically the Gemara in Masechet Shabbos in Daf Kuf Lamed Gimel learns, Uvayom Hashmini means on the eighth day, come what may. Afilu b'Shabbos, as we know, even if the eighth day falls on Shabbos, the mitzvah goes ahead, as much as it seemingly involves certain malachas, but the pasuk states, Uvayom Hashmini, even b'Shabbos. This, of course, as Mefarshim point out, is a halacha that is given to us post-Matan Torah. It's not one of the halachas given to Avram Avinu at the time, for the simple reason that Avram Avinu did not have the mitzvah of Shabbos officially. And therefore, to tell him that even if it falls on Shabbos, one still goes ahead with the milah, there isn't an even there. But in Parshas Tazria, of course, Shabbos is a very significant concern, but milah overrides. And I would like to make reference to a classic question which is raised by the Rishonim. Namely, there are a number of mitzvahs that we are familiar with, that when they fall on Shabbos, they are suspended. We have Shofar on Rosh Hashanah, we have Lulav on the first day of Sukkot, and those two are mitzvahs d'oraisa. But that said, when they fall on Shabbos, we do not perform them. The worry is that a person in his haste, in his perhaps lack of focus or lack of awareness, he may wish to take his lulav or take the shofar to the chacham to teach him how to blow the shofar, whether the lulav is okay. V'yavirenu arba amos b'shus harabim, he may come to carry in the shus harabim. Okay, and this for us is halacha lemaisa, and once in a while we encounter it. So Rishonim asked the question. The eighth day of the child's life falls on Shabbos. There are innumerable items that could potentially be carried, beginning with the baby and ending with the moel's knife and everything else in between. So the question is, how is it, and we know, of course, the halacha is, the mila goes ahead. Why was it not suspended out of a worry that a person may come to carry any of these things? And this question is really Tosus's question, and others discuss it, take the cue from the Tosus. And the Tosus answer, very simply, that the difference between mila and the other mitzvahs is that the mitzvahs of shofar and the mitzvah of arba minim, they are mitzvahs that everyone needs to perform. No one can say, I'm not qualified to shake lulav. You need to get qualified. And no one can say, well, it's just me and the shofar, I don't really know what to do. You need to find out what to do. These are mitzvahs that devolve upon everyone. In contrast, when it comes to mila, we should hope that whoever it is that is planning to do the mila knows what to do before rushing out to find someone to teach them how to do it. By definition, it is restricted to those that know how. and therefore the worry that a person may carry something in his haste in order to find out how to do the mitzvah, that is not such a worry when it comes to Mila as it is with other mitzvahs. The Ran, Rabbeinu Nissim, in his Perush to Maseches Megillah, there, Daf Dalet Amud Beis, says something slightly different. When the person is about to leave the house and perhaps carry the shofar or carry the Arba Minim, one would think that maybe there is someone there who can notice him and stop him, as if to say, maybe there's one person who's preoccupied, but what about everyone else? If he's living with amongst other people, why is it that we don't rely on someone nearby to notice that he's about to leave and say, remember, it's Shabbos? The Ran states that it is for this reason that whenever the famous halacha that we suspend these mitzvahs, that a person shouldn't come to carry in the Shus HaRabim, those rulings are always prefaced with the following words, Hakol Chayovim B'Shofar. That so says the Gemara Maseches Rosh Hashanah. And in Sukkah it says, Hakol Chayovim B'Lulav. And in Megillah, which is Derabbanan, but the Gemara says, Hakol Chayovim B'Kriyas HaMegillah. Why is it that the Gemara prefaces by telling me that which we already know? I mean, we know that everyone is obligated in these mitzvahs. The news is that we're worried that a person may come to carry. But why do we always start by saying everyone is chayav in these things? The Ran explains, because everyone is obligated in these mitzvahs, that is why we don't rely on anyone being able to take note of the other person who's about to leave, because each person themselves is preoccupied in the mitzvah. Hakol chayovim b'shofar. Hakol chayovim b'lulav. I would say parenthetically, this is quite a lesson for us as to how preoccupied we should be with the mitzvahs that we have. Sometimes all of our eyes are on the other person doing the mitzvah anyway, but the way that it should be is that if hakol chayavim b'shofar, hakol chayavim b'lulav, so then each person has their eyes on their own mitzvah, they may not notice the one who's about to leave. Of course, by contrast, when it comes to the mitzvah of Mila, only the father of the child or the moel actually has the mitzvah to do the Mila. Everybody else is there, and all eyes are upon him, and rightly so. And should it be that he's about to leave, there will be at least a minion to immediately apprehend him and to remind him that today is Shabbos. So these are two of the classic and of the more straightforward answers to the very interesting question as to Manishtana HaMitzvah Zos of Mila on the eighth day when it falls on Shabbos. We don't suspend for worry of carrying. We cannot move on from this question without making reference to a classic episode, exchange that took place between Rabbi Kiva Eger and his grandson, Reb Leibele Eger. Reb Leibele Eger, at a certain point, he was the son of Reb Shlomo Eger. I'm not sure what's the most considerate way to phrase it, but he fell under the influence of the Kotzke Rebbe, and he became a chassid. And he was an Ish Kadosh. It was looked upon with a good deal of dismay by the Eger family, as we can appreciate. He kept up ties, of course, with the family, and from time to time he would come back from Kotsk and he would talk in learning with his grandfather, Rabbi Kiva Eger. And on one such occasion, so they were talking, and Rabbi Kiva Eger says, I have a kasha for you. Label it. My kasha is as follows. We know that the prohibition against carrying is to take from the private domain to the public domain. And sometimes there's a further prohibition of carrying four amos continuously in the Rosh Hashanah. What form does that take if a person starts and doesn't stop until they've moved four amos? However, there is an opinion amongst one of the Tanoim, Ben Azai, which states, and we don't hold this way lahalacha, but he states, Mahalech ka'omet. Walking is like standing. And what that means, very simply, is that as far as Ben Azai is concerned, every step you take is considered to be uprooting as your foot leaves and then landing as your foot lands, which means it is a self-contained picking up and putting down. as far as Ben Azai is concerned, it is only when you cross over the threshold from the private to the public domain, that's the act of carrying. Now, what's interesting is, what are the implications for the prohibition against carrying four amos in the Rishus HaRabim? You can't walk four amos in the Rishus HaRabim, as far as Ben Azai is concerned, without picking up and putting down a number of times in between. And therefore, it's very difficult to actually find a situation that a person could violate that prohibition of arba amos Rishus HaRabim. Indeed, says the Yerushalmi, there's only one way that it would happen. If a person were to, in one step, pick up at the foot and move four amos, he would effectively have to jump four amos in the Rishus HaRabim. That is the only way he could violate the prohibition against arba amos Rishus HaRabim. So what is my problem? Says Rabbi Akiva Eiger, we all know that when Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbos and when the first day Sukkot falls on Shabbos, we do not fulfill those mitzvahs because a person may come to carry four amos in the Rishus HaRabim. But we have a principle. The rabbis never issue a preventative decree against something which is considered to be an unusual occurrence. It has to be something that could be common. Davar shelo shchiach, if it's something that is highly irregular, would almost never happen. So the rabbis never formulate a gezeira, a preventative decree. And therefore my question to you, said Rabbi Akiva Eiger, is, given that as far as Ben Azai is concerned, the only way that one could violate this prohibition is by jumping, and jumping for amos in Rishus HaRabim is highly unusual, so why is there prohibition to defend against it, to protect against it? It's good kasha, if we say so ourselves. It's Rabbi Akiva Eiger's kasha. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger responds and says, Zayda, I don't understand the question. If a person's going to do a mitzvah, so why is it so irregular that he would jump four amos in the Rishus HaRabim? So this is Rabbi Leibula Eger having come back from Kotsk. If you're in Kotsk and the opportunity for a mitzvah arises, you jump at least four amos in the Rishus HaRabim. As far as he's concerned, it's the most natural thing in the world. And this is the point that the conversation really ground to a halt as far as that was concerned. So that is the famous Reb Leib Eiger's response to that to Ben Azai's question.
What's with the talus on Shabbat? You also wear a talus in Shul, so you've got it there beforehand, or what?
To wear a talus is like wearing anything else. And from here we move on to the main issue of the parshas of Tazria and Mitzora, the issues of Negoim, of the loosely translated as Tzaras as leprosy. These Nagoim, these afflictions. And without going into the details of the Psukim, which are many, and as we know, Nagoim has a reputation as being a particularly weighty and difficult area of Torah, Nagoim and Aholos, they're notorious almost. But what's interesting to note is that as the person develops this discoloration in the skin, and he comes to the Kohen, and sometimes he's pronounced Tomei, but sometimes it doesn't happen the first meeting with the Kohen. Sometimes it takes a second meeting until it becomes Tomei. Namely, as the Pasuk says, if the Nega is originally a certain size, and then the next time they meet, it has expanded, Pasa HaNega, at that point, he becomes Tomei. So it's interesting that this person, it doesn't become Tomei straight away. He becomes Tomei when the Nega expands. However, there are other situations when he is pronounced Tomei instantly. We find in Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Gimel, V'ra'ah ha-kohenes ha-nega ba'or ha-basa, if the Kohen sees the affliction in the skin, V'se'ar ba-nega ha-fach lavan, if the hair, which was not previously this color, has turned white, Umare ha-nega amok mi'or basaro, nega tzaras hu, that's tzaras, v'ra'ah ha-kohen v'timi oso. The first meeting, he sees that one white hair, Tomei. So we have certain situations that he's Tomei straight away. And another example is in Pasuk Yudalet, which states, uv'yom he-ra'osbo basar chai yitma. Any day that there is what's called basar chai, raw flesh, in the Nega, Tomei, straight away. So we've already seen that there are certain situations that the Kohen waits, and it's really on the second or maybe even third time that he pronounces the person Tamei, and there are other situations that he pronounces him Tamei straight away. And our question that we ask tentatively is, what is behind all of this? What do we learn from this, and how do we understand it? And this is a matter that was addressed by Rav Chanoch Ehrentreu, the Abbezdin of Munich, in his Drushas Komitz HaMincha, and he explains what we all have met in one context or another. If there was ever a case of something being a symptom and not the problem itself, it's tzaras. If a person has tzaras, you know that he has another problem. His problems do not begin with the skin. And what's interesting is the way the Pasuk itself describes a problematic discoloration, back again to Pasuk Gimel of Perek Yud Gimel, where it states, Umar'eh hanega amok me'or b'saro. The discoloration, literally, is deeper than the skin. Now, of course, that doesn't mean that it's physically deeper. It's because of the relief, contrast in colors, it has the appearance of looking deeper, but it's a symptom of tzaras. It's a classic sign of tzaras, and the reason why is because tzaras is always about something that is deeper than the skin. A person who all his problems are on his skin is doing relatively okay as far as Parshas Tazria is concerned. But it looks deeper because it is deeper. There's something wrong with the person. Or to paraphrase, even if it's true that beauty is only skin deep, but personality disorders go all the way down to the bone. And therefore, really what we're worried about is someone who has a problem with their character, with their midos, and are abusing that issue and failing to respond. And that can take a number of manifestations. We should note that to have a problem per se doesn't render the person Tommy. A person approaches and there's a certain nega. Okay, the first meeting with the Kohen, that does not immediately render the person Tommy because he has a problem. However, situation number one. If by the second meeting the nega has spread, that person is Tommy. Because what that represents is someone not who has a problem per se, but whose problem has only increased, even though in the interim he has met with the Kohen, and of course a meeting with the Kohen is a call towards trying to do better, trying at the very least to contain the problem, and maybe even to remedy it. Having met with the Kohen once, and the nega spreads, that's Tommy. For a person to be absolutely unresponsive, and if anything, only to increase the scope of the problem, that's Tommy. That's dealing irresponsibly. That's the first point. But secondly, says of Ehrentreu, we note that there are certain times that the person is Tommy straight away. That means that we're talking about a problem that is much more significant than problem per se. And the first of those situations is Se'ar Lavan. What is so bad about the Se'ar Lavan within the Nega? Says the Komitz HaMincha, Se'ar Lavan, the white hair, has within it a certain connotation. White hair accompanies someone who is advanced in years. That represents someone who has wisdom, someone who has experience. Wisdom is a good thing, unless it lives inside a nega. Because what that represents is a person who not only has a problem, but espouses the wisdom of that problem. They will hold forth in terms of their disorder. They will philosophize about it and glorify it. Problems can be dealt with, but if they are adorned with doctoral theses, then that person is Tommy, because there's no going back. And therefore, the white hair, which is the crown of wisdom within the nega, here is a person who is celebrating their faults. Drastic action has to be taken. And the third case, says the Komitz HaMincha, is the Basar Chai. Now, Basar Chai practically means raw flesh, but of course the word chai literally means alive. And in a sense, you have again the notion that this person has a problem, but they don't feel that they have a problem. In other words, the person is chai. The person is alive and well within the nega, not a care in the world. Again, problems can be dealt with. But if the person is incapable of recognizing that they have a problem, so that is an altogether different order of issue. And therefore, basar chai within the nega means the person is entirely oblivious to any notion that there's anything wrong with them, anything that needs to be fixed, and that needs a different type of treatment altogether. That person is tamei straight away. So it's very interesting to have through these physical symptoms of se'ar lavan and basar chai and pasah hanega, we see what type of problem is part of human existence and needs to be dealt with, and what type of problem is actually being ignored at the peril of the person. We discussed generally that nega'im and saras are symptoms of character flaws. Of course, we know that specifically there is one problem that will lead to saras more than any other, and that is the issue of lashon hara. In the beginning of Parshas Metzora, and the Gemara tells us in Maseches Erechin and Daf Yudalid, Zos tiye toras ha-metzora. Metzora is taken as a contracted form of motzi shem ra. That's the person who speaks lashon hara. And in fact, there is a very well-known medrash that is to be found in Vayikra Rabbah, in the beginning of Parshas Metzora. It's the story of Hahu Rochel. There was a peddler, an itinerant peddler, a salesman, and he's traveling round, and he is asking, calls forth, Man Boi Sama Dechaya. Who wishes to procure the elixir of life? Advertising has a great deal to learn from such a person. Four words, guaranteed to attract a crowd. And indeed, everybody came to him. Who will move? Who will stay away? And the Medrash tells us that amongst those who heard this call, who wishes to acquire the potion of life, was Rabbi Yannai of the Gemara. And he couldn't resist. You've got to ask him what it's all about. So they all congregated around him, and Rabbi Yannai did as well. So when he saw Rabbi Yannai, he pushed him away. He said, you don't really need what I have to sell. There's nothing that will make you more curious than that. And therefore Rabbi Yannai says, no, please tell me. So he took out a Sefer Tehillim, which asked the question, Mi Aisha Chofetz Chaim, which is really his question, who wants the potion of life? And the answer is, Netzor Lashon Chameira, Svasecha Midaber Mirma, Sur Meira, Vaaseitem. I've often wondered whether this salesman sold anything else, because that's not a way to make a living. But as far as the Medrash is concerned, the story is over. Because the question is, who wants the potion of life? And the answer is, that's what David HaMelech is asking. Mi Aisha Chafetz Chaim? But there's an epilogue to this Medrash. Because Rabbi Yannai, as he recounts the story, he concludes and says, I never really understood the pshat in the pasuk until I had that encounter with that rochel. Lo yodati heichanu pashat. I never really got the straightforward meaning of the pasuk.
Until what?
Until that encounter. And that actually, for some, is the most difficult part of the medrash. Because what is it, as much as it was very intriguing and it was very impactful, that he asked who wants the potion of life, and then he took out the Sefer Tehillim. But where is there a new insight into what the Pasuk is saying? That's a good question. Why would Rabbi Yannai say, I never understood the Pshat until that encounter? What do you understand now? So the Al-Sheikh HaKadosh explains that actually, if we follow the Pasuk, we'll notice something very interesting. These two Pasukim. First one says, Mi ha'isha chafetz chayim, ohev yomim leros tov. So the pasuk is talking about a person, but it describes him in the third person. Who is the one who loves life? Who is the one who wishes to ohev yomim leros tov? The next pasuk shifts, it seems without reason, to the second person. It is now addressing someone. Nitzor l'shem chameira. So that's an interesting question. Because if we would keep with consistency, as surely as the first pasuk says, who is the one? Miya isha chafetz chayim. So the answer is, sheyishmor l'shem chameira. So how are we to account for the shift from the third person, Ohev Yomim, to the second person, Nitzor L'shoncha? That's a good question. And it's a pshat question. It says Rav Yanai, but then I understood. Because actually, when we consider this story with the Rochel, it makes perfect sense. Because originally, as the Rochel was advertising, he wasn't talking to anyone specific because he was asking, is there anyone who's interested? So he's talking to the air, anyone and everyone. Miya isha chafetz chaim, ohev yomim, l'ros tov. In the interim, someone approached him, someone engaged him and says, well, what is it? And his response was, to that person, nitzor l'shon chameira. And therefore, says Rabbi Yanai, it could be that perhaps David HaMelech himself even was the first person to present it in this way, or even if he did not actually walk around and ask Mi Yosha Chafetz Chaim, but the most gripping way to present this idea is exactly the way the Rochel did, and that is why it is expressed that way in Sefer Tehillim. First, David HaMelech says, anyone interested? By the time he's finished, everyone should be interested, said David, now that I have your attention, Nitzor L'shoncha Meira. So that's very interesting, especially with psukim like that, that we say them so often to make note of these things. Third person, second person. That's the pshat that was taught to Rabbi Yanai according to the Alshech HaKodesh. Now we do note that this pasuk of Nitzor L'shon Chameira has a very important question attached to it. Because there are 613 mitzvahs. And we could posit that they're all included within Sur Meira Va'asei Tov. There's mitzvahs lo saseh, and there's mitzvahs saseh. Loshon Hara is one of the mitzvahs lo saseh. Lo seilech rochel ba'amecha. If that's true, then as David HaMelech says, Sur Meira Va'asei Tov, he's encompassed everything, including Loshon Hara. We don't find that any other Aveira was singled out. David HaMelech did not say, don't do malacha on Shabbos and Sur Meira Ba'asei Tov. Shabbos is included within Sur Meira. Well, so is Lashon Hara. And therefore, the question that everyone is dealing with is, why is it that Nitzor Lashon Chameira was excised from the klal, from the group, and it actually precedes everything else? It is a two-step process. Number one, Nitzor Lashon Chameira. Number two, everything else. And this, interestingly, is the first question that is dealt with by the Chofetz Chaim in his Sefer Shmiras Haloshim. The Sefer Chofetz Chaim, of course, the Chofetz Chaim himself, as that was the name that became attached to him, devoted much time and energy to the issue of Lashon Hara, which was not fully appreciated, it seems, in his time. And he wrote the Sefer Chofetz Chaim, which is the Halachas of Lashon Hara, and he accompanied it with the Sefer Shmiras Haloshim. And Shmiras HaLoshon is not the halachas of Lashon Hara. It's more the outlook that accompanies Shmiras HaLoshon. And one's tempted to say that there's room to say that it is more valuable to learn the Sefer Shmiras HaLoshon than it is the Sefer Chofetz Chaim. For the simple reason that 95% of cases of questionable Lashon Hara are not questionable at all. They are definitely Lashon Hara. Which means you don't need to open the Sefer Chofetz Chaim to find out just how Lashon Hara it is. It's not an issue of awareness of halachas. It's an issue of a person's orientation and a person's aversion to speaking that which is definitely Lashon Hara. There are certain phrases that can cloud the issue a little bit, but they are illusionary. Very often the conversation begins with the word letoeles. The Toelis is about as effective as Nish Shabbos Garet. It is essentially, it's a euphemism. In fact, the notion, sometimes one feels it, that the word the Toelis is a magic word that actually buys you 10 free minutes of Lashon Hara. For positive benefit. And therefore, when a person learns the Sefer of Shmiras HaLashon, you've taken care of almost all cases. And then you have the other 5%, Tzei Ulamad, the Sefer Chofetz Chaim. In any case, the opening of the Sefer Shmiras HaLashon is about this question. Again, to recap, why does David HaMelech begin with Nitzor Lashon Chameira? It almost carves out a category on its own, and then everything else. And let us preface by referring to a concept. It's quite revolutionary. It is to be found in the writings of at least one of the Rishonim. It is quoted in the name of the Sefer Hasidim by the Ponim Meiros, and it is also to be found explicitly in the Sefer Chovos HaVavos. I will read the words because there is no other way to present it. This is a Sefer Chovos HaVavos, Rabbeinu Bachi Ibn Pakuda, one of the earliest Sifrei Musa that we have, in Shar HaKniyah, Perek Zion, and it says as follows. Adam Yavo, there are many people that will approach the day of reckoning in the future. Im lahem ma'aseihem, and when they are presented with their deeds, good deeds, yimtzu besefer zuchuyosam, they will find in the record of their merits zuchuyos shelo osu osam, mitzvahs that they never did. Viyomru, and they'll say, Lo asinu, we didn't do these mitzvahs. I'm not sure they'll be complaining, but they didn't do them. Viyomer lahem, and the answer that will be given to them is, Asa osan asher diber bachem visiper bignuschem. These were mitzvahs that were performed by a person who spoke disparagingly about you. And here are their mitzvahs. V'chein, k'sheyechzar mispar zuchuyos ha-mesaprim bignusam, from the speaker's point of view, he will find mitzvahs that he's quite sure that he did, and they're missing from his account. Yivakshu oso be'esahi, he'll be looking for them. Where are my mitzvahs? V'yeomer lahem, and they will be told, avdumikem, they were lost from you. Be'es shedibartem biploni Uploni, at the time that you spoke about so and so. The Chovos HaVavos is telling us that it is possible for good deeds having been done already by a certain person to be lost from them and claimed by someone else through speaking Lashon Hara about them. And this idea, as we mentioned, is quoted as well in the name of the Sefer Hasidim by the Ponim Meiros in the Sefer Kosnos Or. And he goes on to say, and the more it takes a while to acclimatize to this idea, but in the name of the Shalom HaKadosh, this explains the pasuk in Sefer Tehillim, David HaMelech, Tehillim Samech Tes, and he's bemoaning the fact that people are slandering him, and he says, Yosichu vi Yoshvei Sha'ar, people who idle around and they sit at the gateways. They were talking about me. Uneginos shosei sheichar. And people who drink. I became a song for them. And the Shalom HaKadosh says, no one likes to have slander said about them by anyone. What difference does it make if the people that are slandering David HaMelech are people that sit by the gateways or people that drink in the pub? Whoever they are, it's not nice that people are saying bad things about you. So why is David HaMelech bemoaning the fact, Yosichu v'yoshvei sha'ar, the people at the gate are talking about me, the people in the drinking houses are talking about me. Does it make a difference where they are, who they are? Says the Shalom HaKadosh, yes it does. Because the full extent of the misery of David HaMelech in that pasuk is that sometimes, Amal, if a person speaks Lashon Hara about me, it's never nice. I can comfort myself that at least I get some of their mitzvahs. But who are the people who are speaking Lashon Hara about me? They don't even have any mitzvahs to give me. They don't have anything. Yoshvei Sha'ar. So I get nothing. It is pure Lashon Hara. Legino Shosei Sheikha. That's a bad mazel. Ad kedei kach. And the Chovos Havavos goes further and says that it is possible even for the one who speaks Lashon Hara to draw to his account misdeeds of the one that he is speaking about. Ad kedei kach. Says Rebbe Farl HaKohen miHamburg, the Talmud of the Shakas Aryeh, a contemporary of the Vilna Gaon, in the Sefer Marpeh Lashon, which to a degree was a forerunner of the Sefer Shmiras HaLashon, says the Marpeh Lashon, we raise the question. David HaMelech is saying, who wants life? Oev Yomim Liros Tov. What's the formula for success? It's two stages. Stage one, Netzol Hashem Chameira. Be careful what you say. Stage two, lead a good life. Sur Meira, keep away from Averos, Vasei Tov, and perform mitzvahs. And our question was, well, why is it that David is taking out Netzol Hashem Chameira and putting it at the beginning? Says Rabbi Farah Lakohen, because if we've been paying attention, we'll appreciate that if a person has no control over the things that they say, they won't necessarily do that well by Sur Meira, Va'asei Tov. Because Sur Meira, they'll avoid Averus, and they may end up getting them anyway because they speak Lashon Hara about people with Averus. Asei Tov, they perform plenty mitzvahs, they may end up not keeping them because of the people they speak Lashon Hara. And therefore, step one is security, stability. Netzor Lashon Chameira, and that will ensure that from this point, whatever mitzvahs you do are yours to keep, and whatever averus you avoid, there won't be any others coming in their stead. Ad kedek. And in fact, the Chofetz Chaim, I'm not sure whether this can be defined as uncharacteristic, but I never saw anything like this. And elsewhere in the writings of the Chofetz Chaim, he says, there is a well-known practice. It is to be found in the Shalom HaKadosh, that when one finishes Shmona Esrei, so everyone has their posuk. And when we say that, that means that the first letter of the posuk is the first letter of their name, and then the final letter of the posuk is the final letter of their name. So if their name is Yaakov, then the posuk begins with Yud and ends with Beis, whatever it may be. Everyone knows their posuk. What's the idea behind this? Why does one say this posuk? Why is it so important to be familiar with it? Says the Shalom, because it is possible on the Yom HaDin in the future that a person will be so disorientated they may forget their name. And therefore, learn the posuk well so you'll be able to reclaim your name. Those are the words of the Shalom, and they're, I believe, well known. And many Sidurim have printed, actually, the entire list from beginning to end of every name with the pasuk that accompanies it. Ask the Chofetz Chaim. We can anticipate that it may well be a traumatic experience, but why would a person forget their name? And their name is their name, however difficulties are happening to them, but their name doesn't change. Says the Chofetz Chaim, according to the Chovos Havavos, we understand, if a person has not been able to avoid speaking Lashon Hara, so throughout the course of a lifetime, there may be dozens of people, hundreds of people, maybe more. And here is someone who will be presented, perhaps initially, with their own wrongdoings, and subsequently with another name, and another name, and another account, and someone else, and this could go on for a while. And by the time they're finished, says the Chofetz Chaim, they may not remember who the real them is in the first place. Say the pasuk, so you remember who the real you is, because there may be any number of names or aliases that are given to you in terms of the principle of the Chovos Havavos. Now, this is without a doubt very sobering as a concept, but it needs to be understood. That is to say, the Chovos Havavos, the words are there, they're set, but should we ask the questions? How do we understand this? Why would it be so? Lashon Hara is a terrible Avera, and let it be a terrible Avera, like other terrible Averas. But to draw someone else's Averas, how Is there a way to understand how that dynamic works? And someone who I saw who addresses this question is Rav Freund of Bayit Vegan, who recently published his another volume of his Pirushim on the Torah, just before Pesach it came out, which meant it was fantastic Chidushim and Kosher LePesach. And Rav Freund addresses this issue head on. And he says, really, we need to open up the matter of Lashon Hara. There's a certain appeal. It draws people to speak in that way, to point out other people's flaws. Why? What's the great appeal? And the Baalei Machshava tell us that a significant part of what draws a person to speak Lashon Hara is because it is imperative for a person, in order to function, to have a positive self-image. A person needs to feel that they're okay. And that's it's a psychological concept, to be okay, and it's very important. Where can it go wrong? The critical question is, on what grounds does a person feel okay? What is the basis for a person's affirmation of their self-worth? For a healthy individual, they judge themselves on their good merits. They have a positive self-image which is self-contained. It is pure for what it is. Unfortunately, there is a certain type of person who cannot sustain a positive self-image unless it is coming off a negative self-image of someone else. As if to say, the way that they ensure and assure and reassure themselves that they are okay is always because someone else is the Russia. Someone else has the problem, and therefore, by contrast, I'm doing well. I'm okay. If the classic formula is, I'm okay, you're okay, which is the way that it's meant to be, but for the Baal Lashon Hara, it is only ever I'm okay because you're not okay. I need you to be not okay. That's what makes me okay. Or to put it into practical terminology, for all the money I spent on my lulav and esrog, they're only really kosher when the persons next to me are not kosher. That's when they're really okay. And I believe that this may be a layer of understanding of a very striking halacha. We know that the Metzorah is Tomas Tzaras, and there's many halachas about that. What is not so well known is that actually the Metzorah is Tomei like a mace. We know that for most people, if they're Tomei, they can make something else Tomei by touching it or by carrying it. That's classic Tumah. A mace, of course, lo aleinu, can be metame even by being in the same room as someone else. He makes the person tame. And what is not so well known, but it is halacha in the Mishnah, in the Nagarim, and is that a metzora is likewise. A person who is in the same room as a metzora becomes tame, even if he didn't touch him. And that is the halachic expression of the concept that a metzora is choshev kemes. As the Gemara says in the Dharm, that a Metzorah is like a dead person. Why is a Metzorah like a dead person? Well, it can mean many things. But in terms of this discussion, a Metzorah is like a dead person because if a person speaks Lashon Hara, they don't exist. They have no self-sustained existence. They only exist off the non-existence of someone else. They only are okay because someone else is not okay. But if there was no one else there, I wouldn't be there. Because I'm only a reflection of everyone else, of all of their problems. In relief, I'm relatively problem-free. But without them, I'm not a topic for discussion. I have no authentic, independent existence. That's a dead person. That's a person who's not there. And Metzorah is Choshev Kemes. And now, says Rav Freund, and this is a very delicate point. But if we say, for what did we say? The Chovos Avavos says it's possible if one speaks Lashon Hara about the other, he gets their Averus. Why? Says Rav Freund, because this person is using the other one's averus. I'm benefiting from them. What makes me into a tzaddik? His averus. So he doesn't get any benefit from them, but I get plenty benefit from them. It says, Zechovas Havovas, so if you benefit from them, so you should foot some of the bill. You should contribute to the expenses. You're using them. And of course, the tragic other side of the coin is that I have mitzvahs. And that's really what does make me into a tzaddik. But as far as I'm concerned, it's him that makes me into a tzaddik. So share your mitzvahs with him. So these are very thought-provoking comments from the Meforshim, Rishonim, and Achronim. If ever we needed more reinforcement as to the tragic consequences of Lashon Hara inside and outside, which of course we don't, here we have it. I'd like to conclude by referring to words of the Rambam, his final words actually, in Hilchos Tumas Taras. It often happens that the Rambam in the Mishneh Torah, which is primarily of course halachas, but the final section of a set of halachas are more discussing the concepts and the themes and exhorting people to be careful about these matters. And at the end of Tumas Taras, which are very complicated, 16 chapters of details of halachas of Negoim, the Rambam says, Val inyan ze, mazhir batorah, with regards to this, the Torah exhorts and says, the Omer, hishama benega tzaras, take care with regards to tzaras. And then goes on to say, this is the pasuk in Parshas Kisetze, Zachor eis asher hasa Hashem elokecha lemiriam baderech. Remember what Hashem did to Miriam. And of course the meaning is clear. If you wish to avoid tzaras, remember what happened to Miriam. Why? Because Harehu Omer, Hisponenu, Ma'ira LaMiriam. Think very well what happened to Miriam, Hanaviya. As we know, she spoke about Moshe Rabbeinu, he shouldn't have separated from his wife, he's no different than us, and she got Saras. Shedibra Ba'achia, Shaisa Gedola Mimenu Bashanim. Was there antagonism between them? Not at all. She was older than him. Vigidalta Alberkeha, she raised him to a degree. She put herself in danger to save him all those years ago. So she's okay with Moshe. And what did she say, says the Rambam? Was it really that bad? In the end, what she said was, so she made a mistake because she didn't know. And she said, she said that he's like other Nevi'im. So if you're average Navi, you're classic Navi, doesn't need to separate from their spouse, neither should he. So the subtotal of the Lashon Hara of Miriam against Moshe is, she said he's a Navi like other Nevi'im. On a scale of slander, it's relatively mild. Afmir gezogt, as they say. The worst thing that was ever said about you is that you're a Navi amongst all the other Nevi'im. You're doing okay. But within context, she didn't recognize that he was unique. Now, what about the pain caused to Moshe? V'hulo hikbid al ha'dvarim ha'elu. Moshe didn't mind. He wasn't hurt by it. Shene emar, the pasuk immediately goes on to say, Vo'ish Moshe onav ma'od. And therefore, says the Rambam, consider, Miriam's case has so much in its favor. She has so much credit with Moshe. She said almost nothing, and Moshe didn't mind, and still she was punished. Afa pichein miyad ne'en shavet saras. She still got saras. Kal v'chomer. So now enter a kal v'chomer. How much more so? Livnei adam harishoy matipshim, so evil and foolish men, shemarbim ledabek gedolos v'niflaos. That they can't. There's no end to their Lashon Hara, and more and more. They'll never be in a better situation than Miriam was. And it wasn't okay. That's the kal v'chomer to learn. Now, what's interesting, and Refined again points this out, is there's a couple of nuances in the Rambam that need to be understood. The Rambam says, look at Miriam. She had so much going for her and still was considered to be an Aveira. How much more so, Livnei Adam HaRishoyim HaTipshim. Rishoyim, evil, Tipshim, foolish. As Refined, a person who speaks Lashon Hara, we can identify with the characterization as a Rasha. He's a bad person. But why would he be called a Tipesh? Tipesh is a fool. You could say he's foolish because it's foolish to do something wrong. But then every Rasha is a Tipesh, which actually is true. But the Rambam has these two terms to describe this person. Rishayim HaTipshim. Where is the Tipshus? That's an interesting question. We can readily see the Rishus, the evil. Where's the foolishness? And the Rambam also said, Shemabim Medaber Gedolos V'Niflores. Great and wonderful things. That's quite a euphemism for Lashon Hara. There's nothing great about it, and there's nothing wonderful about it. So of all the ways to characterize the way that these people speak Lashon Hara, why would the Rambam say Gedolos V'Niflores? Well, I could say Gedolos means it's a great Avera, but Niflores only sounds wonderful. Lashon Hara is not wonderful, and that's really the point that the Rambam is trying to bring across. So why does he call it Niflores? So Ephraim says, and again, the more we understand, I would say, the background of Lashon Hara, the more empowered we would be. If we just cut to the chase and say it's wrong to speak Lashon Hara, we don't have that much of a chance, because there's things that push people to speak Lashon Hara. They need to be dealt with, and then Lashon Hara can take care of itself. What's interesting, says our friend, about many instances of Lashon Hara, is that a person makes a characterization based on relatively incomplete knowledge. That is to say, based on an incident that he saw, or half an incident that he saw, or something and as far as he's concerned, this confirms this person as that type of person. Very often, we don't know the context. Very often, we don't know what came before, because we weren't there. And we don't know what came afterwards, because we didn't stay around. And even for what we saw, we never know what's happening inside the person. That is the whole concept of Dan Lekapsachus. And what's fascinating about Lashon Hara, and of course, it goes together with the ego-driven Lashon Hara personality, is that he is prepared to reconstruct an entire profile based on 5% of the equation. As far as he's concerned, the other 95% are a certainty. What he saw confirms the entire personality, and he will proceed to present it as fact. But it isn't fact. If he would stick to the facts, it wouldn't be interesting. If he would present all the possibilities, no one would listen. They'd leave after possibility number 3. But the damning one is number 4. So he starts with number 4, and that's the only one. And as soon as we hear it said, we know it to be true. It's symptomatic of a person who, it's obviously that way. There's nothing else to consider, I'm sure. That's the problem with the Baal Lashon Hara. He's sure. He needs only to have one slice of a situation. He's sure about the rest of it. He can reconstruct it without a flaw and without ever questioning it or looking back. It's interesting that after the unfortunate but necessary humbling process of the Metzora, when he finds that his house has been attacked by Tzaras, which is uncomfortable now, he comes to the Kohen in Parshas Metzora and he says, Kenega nirali babayis. Kenega nirali babayis. I have something that looks like a nega in my house. Say the Meforshim, if it looks like a nega, it probably is a nega. So what is the rather beclouding expression of ke nega nearly bebayis? Say nega nearly bebayis. If it only looked like a nega, he probably wouldn't come to the Kohen. It's only because it is a nega. So that's what you mean. So why is it saying ke nega? Say the Meforshim, because the first thing that the Baal Lashon Hara needs to learn is don't be so quick to judge and condemn anything. And if it helps, start with yourself. As from his mindset, that's obviously a nega, but a person doesn't like to feel that way. I'm okay, so why does your house have taras? I don't know. Well, do you want to talk about it? You want to investigate? Sure. Is it definitely taras? I wouldn't say that. And therefore, the Torah teaches the person through himself, and it's okay to come to the Kohen, you don't have to say it's a nega, because maybe it isn't, and you never know. That's probably the most valuable lesson for the Baal Lashon Hara, comes at the very outset. You don't know. You never know. What seems to you so clear, who tells you that you have to cast judgment? Maybe you can reserve judgment until you know. It's okay not to know. You have to act responsibly. So you come to the Kohen. But phrase the situation exactly as it is. And how is it exactly? It looks like a nega. That is the best you can do. And that's the way it should be. Because there's so many other situations that look like the other person had a nega. And as far as you're concerned, it doesn't look like it. He definitely has a nega. So it starts at home. And therefore, says Rav Freund, the Rambam describes Baalei Loshon Hara as Rishaim, because they are, and Tipshim. They're evil, they've taken an evil course, but equally, they're foolish. Where's their foolishness? Whenever a person presumes to know much more than they could possibly know, they're a fool. That's the foolishness within Lashon Hara. That you have 5% of the equation and you instantly are convinced of what the other 95% is. Where does that come from? That's a foolish assertion. And most of Lashon Hara is born of that. Rishayim v'tipshim. And that's why the Rambam characterizes their Lashon Hara as gedolos v'niflaos, wondrous. What's wondrous about it? Because if you know what's going on inside of the head of the other person that you saw, that is a wonder. If you can fathom what you didn't see based on the small amount that you did, that is a wonder. So as far as Lashon Hara is concerned, yes, it is wonderful. I'm a wonderful person. I can know these things. But of course, the Rambam is saying, no, these are wondrous in the sense that how could you possibly know this? It's not realistic, and it's not true. It's not in keeping with what it is. The little that you saw does not justify the great deal that you ended up saying. Gedolos is only a product of Niflaos, and that is something that Rishoim and Tipshim have or don't have, and they feel that they do. So it's important as we learn the parshas of Tazria and Metzora, of course we try and understand the details as best we can, but the message to take away is the way to look at each other, the way to look at ourselves, the way to judge situations, the way to withhold judgment from situations. And at that point, the symptoms of tzaras and the halachos of tzaras, they take on a new dimension because they're ultimately a guide for steering us towards positive living. Mia Isha Chafetz Chaim, the end of the day, begins with Netzolosh and Chameira. We'll leave it over there for this evening. I'll mention again...